medical records and any other pertinent information that can be found. So the case abstractor, who is myself, I pull all the medical records from each of the cases or the losses, and then I de-identify them. So there are no names, providers, facilities, nothing that would allow you to know who or what is involved in the case. But then we look at things like access and services, education issues, and then if there's anything trending that could be, I don't want to say causing the loss, because we're not looking at the causes, we're really looking at access and education. And then another part of the FEMUR process is the maternal interview. We haven't started that yet, that's to come, but that really allows the mother to have a voice in what happened, and she can really let us know what she feels she needed, got, didn't get in the process of the pregnancy. What we do know in a lot of these cases is that there are a lot of underlying circumstances that kind of cause the losses or can help to cause the losses, and these are just a few of them. And I just kind of think this is a great way to showcase that it's not just the loss, but there are a whole slew of issues that are underlying in a lot of these instances. So again, I just want to point out that in the FEMUR process, we're not identifying any information, providers, hospitals, nothing's identified. And we're not trying to determine whether or not it was preventable. And we're not trying to identify fault or blame in the FEMUR process. The cases that we review are any baby who shows any sign of life, no matter what their gestational age is, or who dies before their first birthday. And then for the stillborn, it's any infant weighing greater than 350 grams or greater than 20 weeks gestation. So what we hope to accomplish with this process is to potentially identify gaps in service, expand services, really collaborate better with other agencies, to use less resources or money in our efforts. We can give the families a voice, which is really pivotal in the healing process. Decrease costs, like I said, and then conserve resources. So far our FEMUR process, we've done one case review. That was just a few weeks ago, and really right now the case review team is just working to figure out where we stand as a team and try and work out the kinks and awkwardness in what we're doing. And then, like I said, we'd like to start the maternal interview process as soon as I get a little bit more training behind that and really work to see if we can give those families and those mothers a voice.
Thank you, Crystal. Any questions? I would think this would be an absolutely normal process. And it would be all awkward for you, which is just very important.
Absolutely. We'll let you know when we start collecting that data and figuring it out. I really love it. I'm super passionate about it and excited to see where it goes.
The only thing I would add is there anybody that you're looking for?
We have not found a medical provider who's been able to commit the time to us, so we are looking for that person to join our team. And I think that would be really helpful in getting a little bit more buy-in.
And are you looking for an OB provider?
We would prefer an OB provider or a pathologist. Your pediatrician would work. Pretty much anybody who's got, not that everybody has extra time to go to an extra meeting, but would be willing to make that commitment to come and help us out with some of the questions that a medical, you know, a provider, a physician actually needs to be there to answer.
And what do you say? Are you sitting on it?
Yes, I am.
Anything else?
I'm just thinking the provider connected to some of the hospitals. some of the private practice that's basically what we're...
Thank you.
Thank you. Just a question, Damian, are you sitting on the loop at all, or...
It doesn't fit in my schedule at the moment, so...
Okay.
I've been invited to sit on, but...
But maybe even emails that you offer some advice or insight in some areas. Okay, thanks.
Yep. Okay, does everybody have this handout? I'm just going to go through that. And so my name is Pam Halbach. I'm the WIC director. And today I'm just really going to give an update on WIC and talk a little bit about additional WIC-funded programs we have and some additional grants that we have just to support our WIC families. So some of the highlights from the past year is our caseload's been hovering right around 4,000. This past month, October, it was... 4,083, and to give you a breakdown of what those numbers mean, that included 903 women, 358 of them were pregnant, and then 545 of them were postpartum, 1,000 infants, and 2,180 children between the ages of 1 through 4. Race, ethnicity, as far as ethnicity, 39% identify themselves as Hispanic, and 61% identify themselves as non-Hispanic. For races, 64% are white, Black or African American is 21%, American Indian or Alaska Native 6%, and then multiple races are 8%. One of the things we did this past year was to separate out our data and our clinics between the city and county to start to look at, are there different things that are occurring in the city compared to the county? And so we're just starting to get that kind of data, not only looking at nutrition and health risk factors, but also as a clinic, how are we doing? So one of the things we've noticed is we need to do a better job of enrolling pregnant women in WIC earlier than what we are doing there. Part of it might be just because we're not out there as often, but those are strategies that we need to look at too. But then it also gives us data on breastfeeding rates. It gives us data on premature babies, high weight, low weight, all of that type of information too. And we're starting to see some differences clearly between the city and the county. We had our WIC monitoring this year. That occurs every 2 years. Overall, that went well. A couple of things that were identified is that nutrition staff really needed to step up and do their charting in 24 hours. And since that was identified, they've been at 100% ever since. Funny how sometimes that just needs to be pointed out. But it really is important because when you see so many families, it's important to chart right away so that it's accurate information. And also, I thought we could do a better job of how we provided services out at the County Center building. So really worked with the health department and Adeline too, and really revamped how we provide services out there. And I think when they come out and look at it again, they'll be very impressed. We actually have a WIC concierge out there first who greets all the families too. And we have an extra computer out there, additional staffing, so the flow has improved greatly. We did the statewide, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Illinois had a project they called BPC, Being Participant Centered. So really just providing really quality services for WIC families. Our site was chosen to be in a video demonstrating best practices. So that occurred and that's being used now. It certainly would share it if you really, really wanted to see it, but kind of our lesson was that we should keep our day job. So, but it gave some good practical things and what staff were doing well. We have been utilizing our teaching kitchen for nutrition education contacts on WIC pickup days, and that has improved our services great. They'll be talking a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But what we had done then is all the nutrition sessions are held upstairs now, so that there's that component built in for some education. And then we're also able to print out their checks at that same time, so they're not going back and forth. And then we continue to monitor the stores. We're up to 37 stores in Kenosha County that accept WIC checks. And just to give you an idea on the impact in the community, when you look at a rolling one-year time frame, over $3 million are redeemed in WIC benefits to the community. So, and then some additional WIC-funded programs that we have that not all sites do is the breastfeeding peer counseling. And that's really mom-to-mom support, really working with the mom to provide encouragement and education. Our breastfeeding incident is usually hovers between somewhere between 68 and 71%, which is about state average. What we've noticed for our project, though, the project that have peer counselors, the duration and especially the exclusivity tend to be higher, and that's what we see among our project, too. One of the things we changed this year, though, is I used to have one African-American peer and then two Hispanic ones. Well, our Hispanic rates are so high, they're up in the 70s year after year. So what we did was really devote more of that time and dollars to increasing the African-American rate and hired a peer for 20 hours there. So we'll start to see if we're going to notice any changes there. And then the other initiative we did was all of the dietitians plus one of the bilingual clerks receive training as certified lactation specialists, too, so that they're providing current up-to-date information. So hopefully we'll start to see those rates either improve or continue to increase. Our farmer market nutrition program continues, and that's really to encourage families to use their WIC farmer market checks to buy locally. It also helps the farmers, but it helps the participants to increase their fruit and vegetable intake. They receive farmer market checks and they receive fruit and vegetable checks for the grocery store. And both of those are big initiatives. Because one of the things we're noticing is that about a third of our families don't use the fruit and vegetable check at the grocery store. So we're really trying to figure out the why behind that. And there's a couple ideas, and some of it may help down the road, is just that it takes a long time at the checkout to use the fruit and vegetable check, and some families are just embarrassed. Some say it takes too long. Sometimes it's a little confusing, because if it goes above that dollar amount with the fruit and vegetable check, they can use cash or they can use EBT, but it's a little bit more confusing. So part of it is just providing that one-on-one education there. Then we have a couple grants just really to support our WIC families. The first one is the Father Involvement Planning Grant through the Wisconsin Partnership Program. And that one, we had noticed that a lot of our dads were coming to the appointments, picking up with the families too, so we were looking at what can we do to keep them engaged in their children's lives too, for healthier birth outcomes and just healthier families. So what we're doing is working with Dr. Pate out of UW-Milwaukee to do a series of things. It's a planning grant. First of all, we wanted to track the data to see how many are really coming in. Because it seemed like a lot, but we never really kept track. And when we wrote the initial grant, that was one of the things every single reviewer had said, well, how many are coming in? So we're tracking that. Part of research is the whole data collection. So the state is involved in this, really encouraged by it, so they actually allowed us to do the tracking and the surveys in the WIC data system too, so that we can hopefully get a little bit more outcome. So what we found in July, we had 176 dads come in. In August it was like 219, September was 253. We don't know if we're just seeing more dads or if we're just getting better at tracking them. It might be a combination. So, and then we're just waiting for IRB approval to start the survey and the focus group and interviews to see what is it that we can do to support dads more, and then hopefully design some fatherhood programming around that. And then we received a J.R. Elbert Foundation grant this past summer to tie our farm stand that's at our office every Wednesday to the Teaching Kitchen Collaborative. Our goal was 16 weeks of different interactive nutrition activities for both kids and for the adults. It was going on at the same time. They started out at the farmer, and Farmer Jared would talk a little bit about how he grows carrots or how he grows corn. And then they would go upstairs, and there'd be one track for the kids to be doing some different activities and one track for the adults to be doing some type of cooking activity. We had 16 different classes, 16 different weeks of classes. We had hoped to reach 500, and we were just short of 1,000, so we saw a lot. So that was good. And the favorite recipe of all was the baked rutabaga fries. Who would have thought?
Who would have guessed?
That was the top one. They were Facebooking each other, and people were saying, oh, you have to come over here and try this recipe. So that was, and then the second favorite was an eggplant, and we really showed families how they could make this eggplant parmesan in 15 minutes, so to make it a practical thing. And then we worked with the farmer to make sure whatever produce we were highlighting, that it was available then for the families to purchase with their farmer market checks. And the little one there in the beginning, you can see she wasn't too sure about trying eggplant for the very first time, but she really did think it was okay afterwards. So, and then we continue our Fit Family, that's with SNAP Ed funding. It's a behavior change program for obesity prevention for children between the ages of 2 and 5. 100 families we work with each year. One of the nutritionists follows them each month. It's incentive-based, too, so if they're working on increasing healthier beverages, they'll get a water bottle 1 month or, you know, some minimal gift to just keep encouraging. We had our, I guess it's becoming an annual event, our Halloween event just a few weeks ago, had 76 kids come to that. We dressed up, they dressed up, there were different stations where they could go to get different health information, and they had to say, trick or treat, give me something healthy to eat. So some of them weren't as excited about all the things they got, but it was a fun event. And then we have a couple grants that we have just to support the larger community around food and nutrition that I just wanted to share with you as an FYI. Wrote a small grant to look at if we could get seniors, would it help low-income seniors increase their fruit and vegetable intake if we gave them some vouchers for the summer months at our farm stand too. So we had 55 seniors that we worked with one site that received senior food boxes, and without even asking, we just gave it to them, which lessons learned is you should really ask somebody if they want them first, but 80% of them redeemed them, so that's significantly higher than the WIC population, which is usually somewhere between 50 and 55%. Just found out last week we had written another grant to see if we could increase it, and we received additional funding, so we'll be able to increase it to at least 100 seniors next year. And then the other thing, project we're working on, is a community food assessment, community food security, that we had a VISTA last year work on putting that together, and we're just finishing that up, and there'll be a magazine that's looking at community food security in Kenosha County and what can we do to strengthen that. And then lastly, some of the things we're working on for next year, EBT really is coming to Wisconsin WIC. It may not happen in 2014, it may take a little bit in 2015, but I think that will help overall services too, just because it'll be an easier process at the grocery store. We're starting our postpartum weight loss classes in January 2014. Moms in Motion is what they're initially called. They're 6 weeks classes, so hopefully we'll be able to collaborate with the nurses, with the nurse family partnership, and as they're working with the moms and they're ready to start to lose some of that weight, we'll be able to work with them. Expanding our kitchen activities, looking at our fatherhood grant, bringing it to a different level, and then our big thing is also getting a lift so that we're handicapped accessible for the second floor.
And what is EBT?
Electronic benefit transfer. Right now they have paper that they have to use for the WIC, and a lot of projects have already gone to the swipe card type of thing. So It's always interesting when we have somebody who transferred from another state who's never had paper forms, and we're explaining to them, they're like, you want me to do what? I got to do what? Because there's a pretty lengthy process, and I do understand it, too, because I have to go in once a year. The state randomly gives us a site where we need to check to make sure they're doing what they can do. And it is, especially with those baby foods, trying to figure out which ones were approved, and then you get to the register, and you pick the wrong one, and then it's like, well, do you just not want to get it, or do you want to wait for something to go back? And it really can be an ordeal, so hopefully that will improve services. Any other questions, concerns?
With your Hispanic moms, do you find that, or in my office, I find that they're doing both breast and bottom?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And a lot of times they're overfeeding.
Yes, yes, yes. They, that is an ongoing struggle, too. In fact, a lot of them will tell us they're not breastfeeding just so they can get the most formula, so it's really that education, especially those early, early weeks. So any suggestions, we'd certainly welcome them as well.
We always, we tell them, well, the weight's going good or it's going up too fast, so you really don't need all of this extra supplement.
Yeah, yeah. We try to explain it to them as, like, dessert, you know, it's one of those things. You know, that breast milk is perfect. That has everything you want, everything they need. It's kind of like with us, you know, even when we're satisfied, there's still room for dessert, so the babies will take it whether they're hungry or not, but they don't need it. So obviously, it hasn't worked 100%, but yeah.
Any other questions for Pam? Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and feel free anytime you're out and about to pop over, especially on Wednesdays, our busy days. So.
Next on our item, Suicide Prevention Initiative study.
To the right. Yep.
Sorry, I didn't have these out at the door when you guys first came in. This is our logo that we adopted probably in the past year or so. It's been an initiative throughout the state to have branding, and most of the coalitions throughout the state are using it. So just wanted to show you guys what it looked like, and it was of no cost to us. It was something that was developed through the Prevent Suicide Wisconsin steering committee, and like I said, it's just available for all the different counties. Just a little background about the coalition. We've been going since 2006. We are currently on a 5-year grant, and we're on the second year, finishing the second year of that grant. So we've had a long history of having suicide prevention here in Kenosha, and hopefully we'll be starting to see some numbers that, or some information that show that we're doing the right thing. I just wanted to put up this slide to show that we obviously speak a different language than others. In your perspective, places of employment, there's different acronyms that you use. So I want to make sure that you understand what all of these are, because they may slip out during the presentation, but I do try to let people know what they stand for. HWPP is the Healthy Wisconsin Partnership Program. That is our funders. That is the nice people that have been giving us money since 2005 and allow me to have a job. The PDMP is the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, and I'll go into a little bit more detail about that later in the presentation. WISE is the Wisconsin Initiative for Stigma Elimination. SDART is the Self-Harm and Death Analysis Review Team. CAB is for the College Advisory Board. And then QPR is Question, Persuade, Refer. And that is an educational program that we do in the community to help people understand the warning signs of suicide. So this is what it looks like as far as suicides in Kenosha County for since 2000. And presently, we have 17 that are confirmed this year, but we're looking at about 4 pending. So we're not far behind what we were at last year. So if we did the math, it would be around 310 suicides since 2000. Obviously, we want the trend to keep going down, but there's different things, cause factors that have people decide to take their own lives. So this is what our grant looks like. These are the 3 objectives that we have: to prevent access to methods of self-harm with a focus on poisoning, Then we want to also expand our coalition as well as form our SDART team. And the SDART team has formed, and that's something that Crystal is leading the cause, because she just likes talking about death, evidently. So, but she covers all the different stages, which is helpful to have her on board. And then we also want to increase identification, referral, and treatment of persons at risk for suicide and self-harm. Because what we've found with our grants that a lot of the systems weren't talking to each other. They were kind of in their own silos and trying to figure out, you know, how do I refer to this place, or how come every time I refer they don't do anything, where's the follow-up, what's going on? So having the coalition has helped bring lots of people around the table to help share the information and make those processes a little bit easier for people. Then I wanted to talk a little bit about poisonings, because that is one of our focuses. The box on the left-hand side is what our medicine drop boxes look like here in Kenosha County. We have four of them, and we are soon to add two more. I just got word last Friday that we got the okay for one of two that were pending. We're going to add one at Pleasant Prairie Police Department as well as UW Parkside. So those will hopefully be in place by the end of the year. And this has been helpful to get medicines out of people's cabinets, whether a loved one has died, whether it's a medicine you don't need anymore. But unfortunately, we have people that want to hold on to those, and they self-medicate because, well, I had back pain before, so I'm going to keep these because I didn't need them all. And so then when they're having back pain later, they end up using them, or sometimes they sell them, and there's all kinds of issues with those different things. So, and then the box on the right-hand side is a medicine lockbox that we help people to obtain if they are in need of one. If they have small children in the home, and maybe they're taking a lot of different medications, or maybe there was a person that was released from the hospital that had a suicide attempt, we also would give those to them as well. We do ask for a donation, but you know, we do not refuse somebody if they aren't able to do to provide that donation. And it is a combination lock. Does it mean it's indestructible? No, but it is a speed bump so that people have a little bit harder time. So obviously if they're gonna want meds, they're gonna get them somehow, but at least we can't make it that easy for people.
What's a box cost?
If there's one that holds about, I believe there's 12, and it costs about $20. If you go up to like 24 bottles, then it's like $25. And there's one actually goes up to 36. Oh my goodness, yeah. But they have that many meds. But again, if you have four different people in your home that are taking medications, that could be something. But that kind of is overwhelming to think that somebody would have that amount, but I'm sure there are.
I think a lot of people know about these boxes. I've never.
Nope. We've done more of our, advertising through agencies. It's not like if we put an ad in the paper, I think my phone would be ringing off the hook. So it's not that we don't want people to know about them. It's we have a limited amount that we can give out. So we try to work with agencies that can actually say, yes, this family is at risk for an overdose or a child getting into it because maybe the children have learning problems or behavioral problems or whatever, and they wouldn't understand that. So those are more of the families we've been targeting. But you know, if there's suggestions on how to get them out in the community, we definitely are open to that. A lot of times we'll give them out at health fairs too as a prize or part of a raffle.
I think some things would be willing to buy them, but I know you're not breathing. Are these out in any stores?
I haven't seen anything like this. They're mostly online. There's also kind of a, it kind of looks like a bank bag. Mm-hmm. We also have one that has a lock on it as well. It's hard to penetrate that. It's not like you can take a scissors and cut it open or anything. But I think it was something about 2 or 3 years ago that I heard about, and I thought, hey, let's take a look at these and see if that's something we can do. So yeah, I would, you know, if we could have a retail store here and sell safety products, I would love that. But that costs money, and I don't know that those would necessarily be going to keep us or maintain us. But then I wanted to just share our medicine collection report for you because, can go ahead and go to the next slide. Because we've been collecting, obviously, medications for a little while now, and wanted to kind of just show you that it has increased over the years. The first time we collected the medications, we only had the boxes available for I think it was about a month or so before we had to actually do the turn-in. And that worked out very well, and we were able to work with the DEA, because if you remember, maybe about, it had to be in at the beginning of 2011, we still did the medicine drop box, or the medicine collection days, where we would camp out here for, you know, 4 to 6 hours and have a police officer here and have a pharmacist sorting all the medications. Whereas now it goes in a box, it gets sealed up, law enforcement log it in, and they collect them in evidence over at the police department. And one person from the sheriff's department, actually two people from the sheriff's department, meet all the different agencies that collect them, drive them up to the DEA, and we're done. So it's only a very a minimal cost instead of a major cost. And we used to get grants for that to be able to provide that, but this has seemed to work out pretty well. And most of them, like Twin Lakes is open after hours, they're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whereas some of the other ones have a little bit more of a stringent time frame, but they're all over the place, so hopefully people wouldn't mind going, you know, up to the county if they needed to, if Kenosha wasn't open. And Kenosha advertises theirs, I think, until like 5:30, but if you buzzed and needed to get in, they would let you in. It's just that they don't have their doors open during that time. Okay, go to the next one. And then this just kind of shows you the number of boxes we collected as well. It slightly went down. Unfortunately, Silver Lake didn't participate this time, so I don't know if they have some sitting at their office and just the day didn't work out. I didn't really have good communication. But it is my job to oversee these boxes as far as if there's any feedback or if they're not working out, then I talk to the local law enforcement to say, what can we do differently? Because when we first started it, it was a learning process, and Chief Morrissey was really good at working with me on that. So. And then these are just weights. I just kind of like break down to different ways people like to look at it, because when we first started, though, they didn't always weigh them. So this gave us a chance to see how much we're actually collecting and keeping out of landfills. And then we do have a link to our brochure. I will be revising it, but I brought some along, so if anybody wants these, you're welcome to take them. If you want them for your place as a business, let me know. I'd be happy to either send you a PDF if you want to make copies, or if you want us to make a couple copies for you, we can do that as well. If you want to make a link on your website to ours, to this brochure, that would be great, just to get people the information, because sometimes people are like, oh, I didn't know, so I threw it in the garbage, and we definitely don't want them doing that. And then, like I said, we'll add the two new sites that we are going to have, and then also wanting to add Racine's, because with our community, a lot of people, like, I live in Racine County, but I work in Kenosha County, and it's the same way for a lot of people, or it's more convenient because I'm up there at this time of day, so we want to share those different locations in Racine as well.
Can they put pet medications in?
They can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have these big drives every quarter or spring and fall.
We don't do the drives anymore. It's just basically you use the boxes. Okay. So
I know Racine just had.
Right. Racine still gets funding for some reason to do those, but yeah, we have not. But we're working on doing some promotion through the grant that we have. Crystal came up with some cards that we're going to hopefully have at pharmacies, and then different other organizations to let people know about. That there's different places you can dispose of them properly. I just wanted to mention the prescription drug monitoring program as well, because this is something relatively new. Wisconsin is the 49th out of 50 states to have the prescription drug monitoring program. There are some still working on it like us. It did go into effect, I believe June, it was January it started, but there really wasn't anything on the website. So if you've looked at it then and you're like, well, this is nothing, go back and take a look at it. I also brought some brochures for practitioners, because I know a lot of you doctors and nurses. And if you're not familiar with it, it can be a little frustrating to sign up for it, but I think it's worth it from what we're hearing from the doctor that's on our project with us. It's great to look up different medications that the other person's on, because they're not always telling you what they have under their under the repertoire of medications. And it's not because you want to go look up your neighbor and see what kind of meds they're on. You have to sign an agreement basically saying that you're not going to use it for those purposes. And I think it can cut down on the amount of prescriptions we're wasting, as well as people getting smart and doctor shopping. So if there's any questions that you have on that, I would be happy to attempt to answer them or get you in contact with Dr. Zosel at the Medical College, who is our partner on the grant that has worked with it a lot. And there's actually tutorials now too, so it makes it a little bit easier. And if you can't access it yourself because you're busy with your patient or whatever, you can a lot of time have a designee do that, because sometimes it's not as fast as you would like it to be. So
we had heard about that because of the doctor shopping the narcotics. Mm-hmm. Because people were getting scripts at multiple places and they were running all the
different. And we're hoping that not only Kenosha buys into it, but Racine, because if the counties around us don't, then we're going to just get the overflow back and forth.
You need to get Illinois.
And we, there's a lot of doctors that are dual licensed, which helps, but our program doesn't communicate with Illinois or with Minnesota's, and that's a little frustrating, I think, but everybody's programs are different. If it would have been nice if they, you know, would have said, okay, this is universally how you should do it, and then you can add your own little tweaking here and there, but unfortunately, it's everybody does their own thing. So eventually down the road, I'd love to see that they share, but I don't know how to make that happen.
Yeah, and Jenny, it's doing all prescription drugs, not just narcotics or painkillers, or is it just narcotics?
Controlled substances.
Okay. Check out the website, like I said, if you haven't recently, and just take a look at it just to see what's up there, because there's a lot of information, and they also they have some charts and it shows how many prescriptions we've been given out in Wisconsin, and it's kind of alarming how many.
Don't you have to do special logs and new with this program? Because they originally made us veterinarians do it, and then they said,
veterinarians are, I think, a little, they're special.
But they did. We had to right. do all this. It was, mm-hmm. And we started all this paperwork, and the website wasn't quite ready, but it's a log, and you have to pick people's birth dates. No way their dog got them, but we have to pick their birth date. It was a big one. But doesn't everybody have to do this? That's prescribed, all prescribers?
If you prescribe, then it goes into there. But it's mostly the pharmacies that are basically logging it in.
Okay.
But I think it's the physician's job, obviously, to look things up. But pharmacists are being very proactive. We've talked to a couple, and they'll call and they'll say, okay, I just noticed this script came through, and they just got it from this person. They're really being, I guess, pushers of this, for lack of a better term, and they really want to see it succeed. And it is a lot of work on their part, but it helps them so they don't have to call 13 different places.
Well, Walgreens just had nailed recently for dispensing too much. So the pharmacies are getting hit.
It would be nice to see this program go real time. In some states it is real time. Right now in Wisconsin it's about a week lag of information.
So lots to come. It's new. It's a newborn. As we talked about, means restriction is one of our goals to reduce in Kenosha County, to help reduce suicides. And means restriction, in another sense besides poisonings, would be firearm safety. And our message is to let people know that we would like you to lock your guns up, store your ammunition separately, and making sure that, you know, kids don't have access to it. And store them unloaded, because a lot of people's their thoughts are, well, if it's not loaded and underneath my pillow, how am I going to get that intruder? Well, what if that intruder, I have a 17-year-old daughter. I would be kind of naive to think that maybe someday she's not going to sneak out and, you know, go with friends or whatever. What if she snuck back into the house and I thought it was an intruder and I killed her? So I always kind of throw that back at people. And a lot of times people don't think that kids know where their guns are. They do. And they probably know where your keys are too. So it's important that if you know that there's a suicidal person or somebody is depressed or there's a major life event happening with them, to make sure your firearms are stored correctly so that that doesn't be, they don't become a statistic, because it can be prevented. It's that speed bump that helps keep them from possibly making a really bad decision. With that too, we have the cable gun lock program that we do distribute cable gun locks here at the health department. We have 26 different counties in Wisconsin that are also distributing them. And that was thanks to funding by the Charles E. Kugle Foundation. We were able to purchase 12,000 cable gun locks for the price of 6,000 this year. And what we do is ask everybody to fill out this card, just some demographics to let us know, you know, what, who's taking these gun locks. And the majority of them are white males, but there are quite a few females that do take them. But minorities are not taking them, and at least in a lot of our county, or our county, because again, I don't think that we're necessarily targeting those areas, but that's something I think we need to work on. And then it's been real well received throughout the counties. The grant was just not for Kenosha, but we've had a lot of them be distributed out through our health fairs, some through our Nurse of the Day. A lot of times when we do our PPR presentations, we also offer them there as well. And then this just shows you a little bit about the statistics here. So for the male and female, there's males are a little bit more often than females, and sometimes people don't fill it in either. And then our age range, we see the 25 to 44 year olds the most taking them, otherwise the 45 to 64 year olds. Mentioned a little bit about the self-harm death analysis review team, and currently we are meeting quarterly, but we are thinking about meeting a little bit more often, and we are currently reviewing suicides and drug overdose deaths. The group has had two meetings, official meetings, is that correct?
Yes.
I think so. One was interrupted by a tornado, but other than that, we've been doing all right. And the purpose, again, is to kind of see if there's trending data that is going to help us figure out maybe who we need to target a little bit more.
And then is it just adults that you're looking at, or are you also looking at pediatric deaths?
That one we are looking, the age range is 19 to...
So there's an overlap of child death review from the 19 to 21 year range.
We've talked about it, and I don't think that we've had anybody that's been...
Not yet, but we will.
So, but yes, just to, and it's not because we think that child death isn't doing, but it just, we felt like that is considered an adult because they're out of high school. So we'll be talking that over, and if, you know, the next year or something, it seems over-reviewed, then we'll work it out. Then I mentioned Question, Persuade, Refer. That is our educational presentation that we've been doing. We are charged with having, I believe it was 1,200 people we're supposed to train in 5 years, and we're already past that in a year and a half that we've been doing the QPR training. So it's well received. We do it to different agencies. So if you have any need in your businesses to have train your staff to do to be trained in QPR, community members have also taken this. I'm going to a church this weekend to do it, a synagogue in December. We've done the CIP training is also this week, which is the Crisis Intervention Partnership. So it's just getting people to recognize the signs. How do you question somebody if you think they may be suicidal? How to persuade them to actually get that help, and then referring them. What are the resources? And we have developed the resources here through our coalition to be able to offer those to people that take the training.
Have you done the Foster Parent Association?
I have in the past. I tried to get back in, but that kind of fell to the wayside. I wanted to mention our College Advisory Board as well. And these are just the entities that are involved. And we have all of the colleges in the area that don't have satellite office, I should say. So it's Herzing, Carthage, Parkside, and Gateway. that are involved. The hospitals come in and also represent their agencies. Mostly it's the ERs that are involved, and then the mental health agencies. And it's been helpful talking to each other and telling each other. You know, the mental health professionals, I guess I was under the assumption that they knew each other. They probably talk to each other on the phone, but sometimes they have never met before. So it's helping them see each other face to face and just collaborate on a different level. And then I just wanted to mention our resources, and I brought most of those with. I didn't bring any survivors of suicide packets, but if anybody's interested in that, I would be happy to get those for you. But our mental health guide was recently updated in June, and that is available either online, we have it on our website, or you can get multiple copies, and it is in English as well as in Spanish in the same format. Then we also have the counseling services sheet, and we update that every 6 months. Again, that's on our website, and we just added faith-based counseling services to it because people were asking in regards to that. Our community resource card is currently at the printer, and that just went under a major overhaul of trying to organize things a little bit better and just make it a little bit more presentable. And then, like I mentioned, our survivors of suicide packets. The medical examiner's office has been giving those out if there is a suicide to just give the resources to people that may need those. Wanted to mention man therapy, and some of those you can only read, like the big words, and you're probably like, what does that say? these are different posters that we are going to be using in taverns, and this is a grant that we got. It was only for product, so it's posters, those coasters, as well as business cards. And if anybody wants to see them, I forgot to bring them down with me. We actually have some physically in our hands, but it's to get the attention of people so that they visit this man therapy site. And mantherapy.org is geared obviously towards men and making it okay to ask for help, because a lot of times men are afraid to ask for help, or they see it as a sign of weakness. And here you can go on and do an 18-point head check, and it tells you kind of what's going on. You know, is this something that maybe I need to seek some help for? And so the Tavern League, both out in the county as well as in the city, bought into this. We also have Luke's Harley Davidson. We have Club Breakaway that will also be distributing these different materials. And what we're going to do is check in with them just to see what kind of reactions they got. Did people say, what the heck is this? Or did they laugh? Did they want to take the poster? We're hoping to have some of the posters up in our bathrooms, but we know that that's going to be restricted as far as which ones we use, because we want to shock people but not, I guess, make people offended. So yeah, if you're interested in knowing more about that, feel free to let me know, and I'd be happy to share that with you. And then I just wanted to mention these other accomplishments. I won't go into detail with a lot of them, just the clergy summit we had in August, and that was a huge success. First time it's been done in this area, and now Milwaukee is hoping to replicate it. And we had 73 participants from different denominations, and it was a day-long event teaching them a little bit about suicide, because a lot of times people are turning to them asking for counseling because maybe they can't afford it, or they want a spiritual side of counseling, and just teaching them what's out there and hooking them up with the services, because most people didn't know what services are out there. And then our Survivors of Suicide Day, that is coming up on November 23rd. We are encouraging people to attend if you had a loved one that has died by suicide. It's a day-long event as well that talks a little bit about grief and what stage you may be at in your grief, doing some different healing exercises, and then there's a video that AFSP has put together that there's, I think, 300 different sites around the world that actually watch it all at the same time. And then the other accomplishments I think you can read. If you have any questions on those, feel free to let me know. Anybody have questions?
With the gun locks, how old is like the KPD or Sheriff's Department, whatever it is? Because actually a friend of mine just asked me to get a gun lock, and when I called the KPD, they had no clue.
I guess it depends on who you talk to at the KPD, because there's a lot of people that are actually very aware of it because if they've gone through the CIP training or if they have worked with me on different projects or on there. But I can definitely ask that that be sent around as an email, because that's a good idea, because there's always new people coming on board. And there's, if they do the concealed carry class, there's one gentleman that said, you know, can I have 25 of them, and when I need more, can I come back and get them from you? And sure enough, he did. So some of them will carry out community resource cards in their squad cars, but maybe they carry a couple cable gun locks. That wouldn't be a bad idea as well. Pretty soon they're going to be like, Debbie, do you want me to put all your stuff in my trunk? Yes, I do. Thanks for keeping. So thank you for asking.
Dedication.
Right.
There's some car seats.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's right. Currently, that I was able to refer people to is the Rotary building over on the 14th.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the Dennis Walsh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was still in place, and he didn't even have any.
Right, because I was going to say, usually he has some, but he must not have asked me to replenish his supply recently. So, and it's not that, you know, they can't get them from other places. There's Project Child Safe, but they pretty much have gone to where it's really hard to get theirs, and that's where we started trying to purchase them ourselves, because they were limiting how many you get as well, and we would just go through those very easily. Like at the Kenosha Expo, we go through probably 200-300 cable gun locks there between the police department's site and our booth there. So so yeah, I would be more than happy to. I'll call Dennis, he's a friend of mine, so I'm just saying, here's some more cable gun locks, because we have some sitting up there.
Another question was with the suicide. Are there statistics based on attempted suicides and attempted suicides?
Can you say the last part of it? The attempted suicides and
then they're tracked as attempted suicides, and then they go on to actually commit suicide.
I don't know that those are. I don't know that that's necessarily connected. When we do the death reviews, we sometimes the parents will say that there was a prior attempt. But if that information is not given, we don't necessarily know that. But we're trying to get some attempt data, and that's been a little bit difficult because of HIPAA violations and things like that. But yeah, we're working on it. But there's no real way to correlate, okay, this person's attempt, unless they're telling us that information.
On this gun lock issue, I'll bring up, I'm on the Joint Services Board. Mm-hmm. I'll bring it up to the director, because if you're calling the KPD number 656-1234, mm-hmm. that's being answered by Joint Services. It's one of the 911 intake. Mm-hmm. Sheriff, they got the Sheriff Council, Police Council, Fire Council, 911. So if it was possible, dispatcher didn't know about. Mm-hmm. But I'll make sure that we get this out of the next board meeting.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Debbie? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Cindy?
I'll just have a couple of items, updates for you. One, I just want to make mention that our 2012 annual report is over there, so please, if you haven't taken a copy and if you have any questions, feel free to ask in regards to our 2012 information. In our environmental department, we had one sanitarian that resigned. He's back to Racine, and so we'll be filling that with probably one of our techs, our public health environmental techs. Our lab intern, our forensic chemist, she's doing very well, and she's continuing to be receive support and mentoring through Carlton, our previous lab manager, and that'll probably end around December. HUD department is gearing up for winter. I just got an email right before walking in here that our reproductive health team, Pam Kavalauskas, she received $16,000 from the Women's Country Club golf outing. That'll go to our Women's Fund for Breast and Cervical Cancer Screening. So yay, Kenosha. That does continues. I don't know how much money over the years have we, they have just been wonderful partners.
It's been almost 10 years, so almost $100,000, because it's more than $10,000 a year at this one golf outing, and they contributed so that we locally can take care of women. It's really a great thing that they do.
And it's innovative, too. There aren't many places throughout the state that have this kind of collaborative effort and additional resource dollars to support women that don't have funds in order to seek.
There's no administrative fees taken out of it at all. It just goes specifically for initial services, diagnostic, for treatment, medication. We have, I can't even think of how we call it, wigs. I was going to say, I can't even think of what we call it. We have a wig program now for women that are losing their hair, and we have a woman that has a shop here, and she actually caters to that. It's just beautiful.
Oh,
only talk about it. It's really important.
I think between Pam and Gwen, they've worked this network. You know, we have providers that really just, their cost is just minimal in order to provide the services and draw off of this fund. So it's been just a wonderful relationship, not only with the golf out in the Kenosha Country Club, but also the providers in our community that are supporting this project. And our 2014 budget was approved by County Board, so it's all good to go. And just a couple of positions that we have left to fill, a public health tech for the environmental section, I think a PNCC nurse, and of course the sanitarian will be doing a shift internally. So that's it. Happy holidays to everyone.
Accreditation?
Well, November 19th and 20th, the National Accreditation Board will be, we're on their agenda. Kenosha County is on the agenda for them. And so they'll be reviewing the information provided from the site visitors. And within within 2 weeks, we'll be receiving written communication either through email and or a letter stating that, of course, we're approved. And we'll be sending out to email right away. We actually have our planning party of what we're scheduled, so there's no doubt on our end.
Any particular highlights or lowlights in the annual report?
Just a lot of work. You'll see that the teams have just been doing a fabulous job. We've been hitting a lot of benchmarks. And it actually is reflected in our budget because of our revenue generation. And those are all connected with our benchmarks for staff and accountability targets for programs and services. So it's a real nice joint effort in regards to funding and program services within our community. The other teams, we're doing a lot of urine testing for different programs, especially all the drug courts that are going on. Environmental team is really in transition, and even though they're in transition, they're keeping up with all their tasks with inspecting.
Thanks, Cindy. You're welcome. Corporate Council, any comments?
Not here.
Other businesses allowed by law? Any closing board comments?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Sure.